Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, June 25th, 2022, weekend edition. Court overturns Roe. Two commentaries. First one by Kathy Broderick, Midland Democratic Party Chair. What it means. Today, fractured America is in two groups, those who believe in forced birth and those who don't. At its most basic form, the beliefs of a small group of people in elected offices in each state will regulate the lives of families and how many children they will have. In many states, including Texas, a woman will no longer be able to terminate an unplanned pregnancy. As an older West Texas woman, I have observed a lifetime of judgmental people who believe their opinions are more valid than mine. Now, that set of judgmental evangelicals believe their prayers have been answered with new laws to stop sinful behavior of others. Midlanders Kevin Sparks and Tom Craddock will now get to make this decision for you. They get to make laws legislating health decisions for the women in the state of Texas, along with their fellow state senators and House members. Voters need to make their voices heard. We must elect different state leaders who believe women are entitled to equal rights and are not subservient to lawmakers who want to legislate morals. We must speak out. We must get rid of the Kevins and Toms in leadership positions. The court has taken us back to the original Constitution that did not give rights to women. We don't have to stay there. Second commentary is by Bishop Michael Siss. What it means. From the moment of conception, a human being has the right to life. Therefore, I give thanks to God for the decision by the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade. This is the answer to my prayers. I am also grateful that in 2021, the Texas Legislature and Governor Greg Abbott already passed the Human Life Protection Act, a law prohibiting elective abortion, which will become effective 30 days after the final ruling is issued. I encourage everyone to offer ongoing practical support to our local pregnancy resource centers and to pray for their staff and volunteers. Pregnant mothers in our communities in West Texas need support to help them obtain the necessities of life for themselves and their children. This is a time for all of us to step up our support for mothers and fathers in welcoming and caring for God's precious gift of life. In the Bible, Psalm 139 says, "You formed my inmost being. You knit me in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works." Every child growing in the womb is loved by God. I hope and pray that more and more people in our world will come to affirm this fundamental truth. Midland reacts as expected. By Stuart Doreen. The reaction to overturning the Roe v. Wade in Midland probably didn't surprise anyone. Midland's pro-life contingency celebrated. Today is a great day in the United States with the formal pronouncement from the U.S. Supreme Court that overturns Roe v. Wade, the most unjust law of any law that has existed since the founding of this country, which sanctioned those living outside the womb to take the life of an innocent person living inside the womb. State Representative Tom Craddock added, "Today, the U.S. Supreme Court has overturned a landmark decision for pro-life advocates. The Texas legislature has worked tirelessly to protect the unborn, and today the federal case law aligns with the opinions of a majority of Texans." And pro-choice residents expressed their disappointment. As the proud former CEO of the local Planned Parenthood health centers, I am heartbroken and angered by the actions of the Supreme Court this morning, Carla Oliva wrote. I am deeply concerned what abortion care will look like for individuals of color, lower income, and families in need. I remind everyone that your vote and voice counts. Let it be heard. What the decision changes in Midland remains to be seen. Midland has been without a Planned Parenthood center since 2013. In fact, Planned Parenthood had left much of West Texas, or in the case of Lubbock, ceased performing abortions. Kathy Broderick, chair of the Midland County Democratic Party, wrote that the decision showed America is fractured into two groups, those who believe in forced birth and those who don't. Sarah Spector, a Democrat who has run for district judge, stated her on her Twitter account, "We all know impoverished women who were raped will have no right to an abortion tomorrow." There appeared to be frustration for a ruling that most expected. A leaked draft opinion indicated a court moving toward the new reality. Still, in Midland, the reality for a while has been the closest abortion center is located around 100 miles away in Hobbs. "Texas is a pro-life state. We have taken significant action to protect the sanctity of life," said Greg Abbott. "Texas will always fight for the innocent unborn, and I will continue working with the Texas legislature and all Texans to save every child from the ravages of abortion and help our expectant mothers in need." Texas law, according to the Associated Press, bans most abortions after 6 weeks and makes no exceptions in cases of rape or incest. The AP also reported that state data shows the number of abortions performed in Texas, roughly 24 clinics, fell by half in the 5 months after the law came into effect, compared to the same period a year earlier. Texas had more than 40 abortion clinics in 2012, before a decade of Republican chipping away at abortion access began forcing providers to close. Without Roe v. Wade, Texas plans to ban virtually all abortions 30 days after the ruling. Abortions would only be allowed when the patient's life is in danger or if they are at risk of substantial impairment of a major bodily function. Midland, though, has represented itself for decades as a pro-life community. One of the larger fundraisers of the year is a banquet conducted by the Life Center, which, according to its website, is a nonprofit, faith-based alternative to abortion organization advocating sexual wellness. When asked about reaction to the Supreme Court decision, the organization also noted the need to continue our work to educate and assist young women who find themselves pregnant and with questions and needing assistance. Choose Life Midland is always here to help. Kevin Sparks, a Republican who will represent Midland and Odessa in the Senate next session, said this decision will now be sent down to be determined by each individual state, the way our Constitution intended. He also added the decision allows Texas lawmakers to focus on the needs of the living, providing support for both mothers and their babies. In Abbott's statement, he said he signed laws that extended Medicaid health care coverage to 6 months postpartum, appropriated $345 million for women's health programs, and invested more than $100 million toward alternatives to abortion program. This critical program provides counseling, mentoring care, coordination, and material assistance such as car seats, diapers, and housing to mothers in need. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton offered in his statement a potential roadmap moving forward, specifically saying that we must continue the same vigilance toward a more perfect union made possible through a return to a morality that values life from conception to end of life and all phases and facets in between. We must be thankful in this victorious moment, humble and peaceful toward those who disagree, and filled with grace and truth in the relentless pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness for all. Rig count rises across nation. By Mel McEwen. Drilling activity continues to climb as high commodity prices encourage oil and gas operators to step up activity. Oilfield Services Baker Hughes said Friday, the rig count, which it has issued weekly since the 40s, climbed by 13 to 753, the second consecutive weekly increase, and a record 23 consecutive monthly increase, and the highest level since March of 2020. The number of rigs seeking crude oil jumped by 10 to 594. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 3 to 157. Warrior reveals major acquisition by Mel McEwen. Even as the oil field service sector manages challenges from equipment shortages to labor shortages, Midland's Warrior Technologies is steadily on a growth path. We're growing and expanding, said Trip Womack, chairman and founder of the company. He told the Reporter-Telegram, the acquisition adds four new service lines, hot oil, winch trucks, pump trucks, and frac trucks. He said Warrior's acquisition of the large division of a private Permian Basin-based company that didn't wish to be identified. Billy Doucette, chief operating officer for Warrior, said the acquisition includes 18 vacuum trucks, 8 hot oil trucks, 4 pump trucks, 4 winch trucks, 32 frac tanks, and 23 field employees, as well as strategically located Midland Yard. He said the company has already ordered 10 new trucks to be delivered next year and 15 in 2024, along with 6 Western Star trucks, 4 pump trucks, and 3 winch trucks. Jeremy Jackson, senior VP, observed that the industry is currently in unprecedented times. We're seeing a lot of growth within the industry, but it doesn't mirror other oil booms. The economy isn't declining as in other booms. In this case, inflation is surpassing what we expected 6 months ago. This boom is difficult to manage. Added Doucette, the easiest way to manage the challenges is to have a superior service mindset. A commitment to safety is also important, the three said, with Womack noting the company has gone 5 years without a recordable incident. Jackson said Warrior has started up a reclamation and remediation division and a vapor and gas recovery and mitigation division. Warrior, which began operating in 2018, is an industrial and environmental service company with service lines serving the energy, industrial, agricultural, renewable energy, solar and wind, food processing, and construction sector. In addition to reclamation and remediation and vapor and gas recovery and mitigation, services include proprietary patented cleaning of tanks, abandonment and abatement services, and mechanical services.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with more articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Saturday, June 25th. Permian Basin faces rules that could curb drilling, by Jennifer A. Glowley, Bloomberg. The Biden administration is considering triggering tougher anti-smog requirements that could curb drilling across parts of the Permian Basin, the world's biggest oil field that straddles New Mexico and Texas. The Environmental Protection Agency is weighing labeling parts of the Permian Basin as violating federal air quality standards for ozone, a designation that would force state regulators to develop plans for cracking down on that smog-forming pollution. The move, outlined in a regulatory notice, could spur new permitting requirements and scrutiny of drilling operations. Ozone levels in the basin have surpassed a federal standard for the last several years, really since the fracking boom took off in the Permian, said Jeremy Nichols, Climate and Energy Program Director for Wild Earth Guardians. The conservation group formally petitioned EPA for the so-called non-attainment designation in March 2021, and roughly 6 months later warned the agency it intended to sue to force action. The designation basically says you've got to clean up this mess or the consequences are going to get even more severe as far as restricting your ability to permit more pollution and more development, he said. West Texas does not have monitors taking ozone readings on its side of the Permian. Monitors just over the border in the Eddy and Lay counties of New Mexico have recorded average ground level ozone levels exceeding the 2015 standard of 70 parts per billion several years running. Even at low levels, ozone can worsen asthma, emphysema, or other respiratory illnesses. If the region is deemed in violation, state regulators would have 3 years to develop plans for lowering ozone levels, including by preventing new industrial facilities from worsening air quality and ensuring existing sites deploy technology to keep pollution at bay. Recession fears continue to pressure markets, by Mella McEwen. Fears of a global economic recession that sent crude oil prices tumbling $8 last Friday continue to ripple through commodity markets during a holiday-shortened week. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 2 of 4 trading days, starting with a $1.09 raise Tuesday. Prices then sank $3.33 Wednesday and an additional $1.92 Thursday to send WTI close to $100 a barrel. Prices gained $3.35 Friday to pare the week's losses to 1.7%. WTI ended the week at $107.62, down from $110.65 at Tuesday's close, and from $109.56 at last Friday's close. The posted price closed at $104.10, according to Plains All American. Natural gas on the NYMEX fell 3 of 4 trading days with a 5-cent gain Wednesday, the commodity's only increase. Prices started the week sinking 13.6 cents, fell an additional 62 cents Thursday, and ended the week dropping another 2 cents to close at $6.22 per MCF, down $6.80 at Tuesday's close, at $6.94 at Friday's close. Crude demand destruction is happening as the U.S. recession angst darkened the global growth outlook. The oil market won't be tight much longer as factory activity is quickly softening. Business confidence is clearly in deterioration mode and as the consumer is spending less. In his daily newsletter Friday, Edward Moya, senior market analyst, the Americans at OANDA, wrote that oil was ripe for a rebound after falling 18% in less than 2 weeks. The short-term demand outlook remains robust, he wrote. Inflation is public enemy number one, but the recent slide with oil prices was overdone. The oil market is too tight as Asia's refining margins soar to record levels. Respondents to the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas's quarterly energy survey increased their forecast of where WTI will end the year. Most chose a range between $100 and $110, with the average at $107.93 per barrel. Forecasts ranged from a low of $65 to a high of $165. The futures price during the survey period was $119.56 per barrel. This compares to the first quarter, when the average was $93.26 per barrel, and the range was from a low of $50 to a high of $200. After 7 of years of depressed oil prices, it is nice to have the capital to drill. But with the recession looming and the possibility that the war in Ukraine will end in the next few months, the price of oil could significantly decrease, wrote one survey respondent from an exploration and production company. I do not want to get caught again making obligations based on high prices that I must fulfill when low prices come back. This is what nearly sunk me in 2015 and 2016, and I never want to experience that again. Another E&P respondent wrote, I love high oil and natural gas prices, but they are really hurting the economy and citizens are paying the price. One respondent from a service company wrote that oil field activity has not tracked the usual response to the rise in oil prices due to capital discipline by E&P companies, and that discipline is not going to change. The industry still feels threatened by the green agenda promoted by the administration. Another service company executive wrote, the idea of general inflation, higher oil and gas prices, and Federal Reserve rate hikes leading to a recession is being discussed among my peers. This is a tempering enthusiasm and increasing concern about a whipsaw crash in prices for oil and natural gas. Briefs. Midland County. Report states man, 61, killed in rollover. A 61-year-old Midlander died Wednesday afternoon after his vehicle rolled over on Business 20 east of Midland, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported Friday that Kenneth Sean Broveshield was driving a 2006 GMC Sierra west on Business 20 near mile marker 144, about 3 miles east of Midland. He was traveling at an unsafe speed for a curve in the roadway, and the vehicle traveled off the roadway to the right, and the driver then overcorrected to the left, sending the Sierra into a side skid. DPS then reported that Bullshield's Sierra then rolled over and he was ejected from the vehicle. The crash happened around 3:40 p.m. and Bullshield was not wearing a seatbelt, according to DPS. Glasscock County. DPS says 66-year-old dies after blowout. A 66-year-old Big Spring man died Thursday after a Mack truck rolled over Thursday on State Highway 158, southeast of Midland in Glasscock County, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported Friday that Terry Jack Smith was traveling west on State Highway 158, 16 miles southeast of Midland, when a front left tire blew out, resulting in the 2007 Mack truck veering across the eastbound lanes. The truck then continued south off the roadway before rolling over into a field, according to DPS. DPS reported the crash happened at around 1:34 p.m. and Smith was not wearing a seatbelt.
Charles M. Moffett passed away on April 28th. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday at Parks Foundry Chapel in Manor Park. An interment will be held in the future at Hillside Memorial Garden Cemetery in Snyder. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin and Welsh Funeral Home. Curtis Williams Mewbourn passed away on June 23rd. A celebration of life will be held on Monday, June 27th at 11 a.m. at Marvin United Methodist Church in Tyler. C. Wendell Schoenberger passed away on June 12th. A memorial service will be at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home on Thursday, June 30th at 11 a.m. Wendell's ashes will be interred in the Dallas-Fort Worth National Cemetery in Dallas after a brief service with military honors on Tuesday, July 5th at 10:30 a.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Mary Diane Garrett passed away on June 20th. Funeral service will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, June 25th at First Christian Church. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Mary B. Resavage passed away on June 22nd. Rosary will be at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home Monday, June 27th at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be at St. Anne's on Tuesday, June 28th at 10 a.m. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Roland Berzoza passed away on June 21st. A rosary will be held at 7 o'clock p.m. Monday, June 27th at Family Services Funeral Chapel in Kermit. Mass will be at 10 a.m. Tuesday, June 28th at St. Thomas St. Joseph Catholic Church in Kermit. Arrangements are entrusted to the Family Service Funeral Parlor in Kermit.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, June 25th. Supreme Court overturns Roe. The Supreme Court on Friday stripped away women's constitutional protections for abortion, a fundamental and deeply personal change for Americans' lives after nearly a half century under Roe v. Wade. The court's overturning of the landmark court ruling is likely to lead to abortion bans in roughly half the states. The ruling, unthinkable just a few years ago, was the culmination of decades of efforts by abortion opponents, made possible by an emboldened right side of the court, fortified by three appointees of President Donald Trump. Both sides predicted the fight over abortion would continue in state capitals, in Washington, and at the ballot box. Justice Clarence Thomas, part of Friday's majority, urged colleagues to overturn other high court rulings protecting same-sex marriage, gay sex, and the use of contraceptives. Pregnant women considering abortions already have been dealing with a near-complete ban in Oklahoma and a prohibition after roughly 6 weeks in Texas. Clinics in at least eight other states, Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Kentucky, Missouri, South Dakota, Wisconsin, and West Virginia stopped performing abortions after Friday's decision. Abortion foes cheered the ruling, but abortion rights supporters, including President Joe Biden, expressed dismay and pledged to fight to restore the rights. "It's a sad day for the court and for the country," Biden said at the White House. He urged voters to make it a defining issue in the November elections, declaring, "This decision must not be the final word." Outside the White House, Ansley Cole, a college student from Atlanta, said she was scared because what are they going to come after next? "The next election cycle is going to be brutal, like it's terrifying, and if they're going to do this again, what next?" Marjorie Dannenfelter, president of SBO Pro-Life America, agreed about the political stakes. "We are ready to go on offense for life in every single one of those legislative bodies, in each state house and the White House," Dannenfelter said in a statement. Trump praised the ruling, telling Fox that it will work out for everybody. "The decision expected to disproportionately affect minority women who already face limited access to health care, according to statistics analyzed by the AP. It also puts the court at odds with a majority of Americans who favor preserving Roe, according to opinion polls. Surveys conducted by the Associated Press and the NORC Center for Public Affairs Research and others have shown a majority in favor of abortion being legal in most or all circumstances, but many also support restrictions, especially later in pregnancy. Surveys consistently show that about 1%, 1 in 10 Americans, want abortion to be illegal in all cases. The ruling came more than a month after the stunning leak of a draft opinion by Justice Samuel Alito, indicating the court was prepared to take this momentous step. Alito, in the final opinion issued Friday, wrote that Roe and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, the 1992 decision that reaffirmed the right to abortion, were wrong and had to be overturned. "We therefore hold that the Constitution does not confer a right to abortion. Roe and Casey must be overruled, and the authority to regulate abortion must be returned to the people and their elected representatives," Alito wrote in an opinion that was very similar to the leaked draft. Joining Alito were Thomas and Justices Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. The latter three justices are Trump appointees. Thomas first voted to overrule Roe 30 years ago. Four justices would have left Roe and Casey in place. The vote was 6-3 to uphold the Mississippi law, but Chief Justice John Roberts didn't join his conservative colleagues in overturning Roe. He wrote that there was no need to overturn the broad precedents to rule in Mississippi's favor. Stephen Breyer, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan, the diminished liberal wing of the court, were in dissent. With sorrow for this court, but more for the many millions of Americans who have lost a fundamental constitutional protection, "we dissent," they wrote, warning that abortion opponents now could pursue a nationwide ban from the moment of conception and without exceptions for rape or incest. Attorney General Merrick Garland said in a statement that the Justice Department will protect providers and those seeking abortion in states where it is legal and also work with other arms of the federal government that seek to use their lawful authorities to protect and preserve access to reproductive care. In particular, Garland said the Federal Food and Drug Administration has approved the use of mifepristone for medication abortions. More than 90% of abortions take place in the first 13 weeks of pregnancy, and more than half are now done with pills, not surgery, according to the Guttmacher Institute, a research group that supports abortion rights. Mississippi's only abortion clinic, which was at the center of Friday's case, continued to see patients on Friday. Outside, men used a bullhorn to tell people inside that they were going to burn in hell. Clinic escorts wearing colorful vests use large speakers to blast Tom Petty's I Won't Back Down at the protesters. Mississippi, Alabama, Kentucky, and Missouri are among 13 states, mainly in the South and Midwest, that already have laws on the books to ban abortion in the event Roe was overturned. Another half dozen states have near total bans or prohibitions after 6 weeks of pregnancy, before many women know they are pregnant. In roughly half a dozen other states, including West Virginia and Wisconsin, the fight will be over dormant abortion bans that were enacted before Roe was decided in 1973, or new proposals to sharply limit when abortions can be performed, according to Guttmacher. Outside the barricaded Supreme Court, a crowd of mostly young women grew into the hundreds within hours of the decision. Some shouted, "The Supreme Court is illegitimate," while waves of others wearing red shirts with the pro-life generation votes celebrated, danced, and thrust their arms into the air. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, June 25th. Odessa's fire coverage could get new look. Fire chief thinks Odessa needs two or three new stations. When Odessa Fire Station number 9 opens on East 87th Street at the end of July, it'll be the first time the city has added another station since 1984, despite the fact that it has grown by 17 square miles since then. That being the case, Odessa Fire Rescue Chief John Alvarez will soon ask the Odessa City Council to hire a firm to confirm his suspicions. Odessa needs two or three new fire stations. Every year, the OFR responds to roughly 22,000 EMS, fire, rescue, and hazardous material calls from its 8 stations, Alvarez said. Lubbock, which does not handle medical emergencies, responds to 30,000 calls a year and has 19 stations, he added. 30% of OFR's calls aren't even in the city, Alvarez said. Due to a contract with Ector County, his firefighter paramedics are solely responsible for responding to all of the county's medical emergencies, and they are dispatched simultaneously to fire and rescue calls with the county's volunteer fire departments. That means his 200 or so firefighters and paramedics are actually covering 903 square miles of territory and not just the city's 52 square miles. If the council agrees, the contracted firm will look at the city's response times within the city limits, where most of the calls originate from, and where additional stations should be located. According to the National Fire Protection Agency, fire departments should strive to be on the scene of emergencies within 5 minutes and 20 seconds, and Alvarez said the OFR is not meeting that standard in the Lawndale area and are not close to meeting it in the Parks Bell area east of Faudry Road. That's another area that has continued to grow and has grown quite a bit. There's a school out there now, IDEA, and that's a huge school out there, and our nearest fire station to that location is Fire Station 5 on East Ridge, Alvarez said. Folks in the county have it even worse. They are seeing response times of 10 to 20 minutes. Recognizing the issue, Ector County Commissioner Mike Gardner, whose precinct covers West Odessa, said the commissioner's court has already agreed to hire the same firm to conduct the same study in the county. He believes the single stations responding to emergencies in Goldsmith, South Ector County, and Gardendale are providing adequate coverage, but he's positive West Odessa could use another station. We know the response times could be better than they are, Gardner said. In addition, both Gardner and Alvarez noted there have been too many times when city crews stationed closest to West Odessa are tied up on one call and another will come in, either in West Odessa or within the city limits. We are fighting 2 structure fires a couple of years ago. We had a full complement of our people out on a structure fire, and another one popped in West Odessa. both of them were in West Odessa, and we had a house inside the city limits that was burning, and we had no units to send. Alvarez also pointed out that because there aren't enough fire stations, crews often have to cover for each other within the city limits. 70% of OFR's calls are medical calls, and it takes a lot of time for paramedics to stabilize a patient, take them to the hospital, write their report, disinfect the ambulance, restock the ambulance, and get back into service, he said. Complicating matters is the fact that fire trucks often have to go to the hospital with the ambulance crew because they've got to provide a ride back for the paramedics. There are additional risks to be considered when having to respond to calls further away than normal, Alvarez said. There's not only the wear and tear on the $1 million fire trucks, but there's also taking the safety risks associated with traveling through traffic with lights and sirens on. The city must also consider OFR's other needs soon, Alvarez said. Station 2 on East Murphy Street and Station 3 near UTPB are starting to show wear and tear, and they are also about one-third the size of the average modern fire station at just 5,000 square feet, he said. Alvarez said the city manager and council have always been supportive of OFR, but he thinks it'll take much more than their support to see the department's needs. It'll take the support of the community. If we're ever going to move forward with anything we do in this city, whether it's our infrastructure, when it comes down to these water lines, whether it's our parks department, any of our streets, our fire stations, police department, it's going to take something above that to make these changes, Alvarez said. Yes, we have a certain tax rate, but at what point do we continue to operate in that tax rate? If we don't ever do something, if we don't ever grow that, we're never going to move as a community when it comes to services. We will never progress, and that's unfortunate because it affects the citizens. Nobody likes taxes. I don't like taxes, but it's a necessary evil. As for a new fire station in West Odessa, Gardner said the county could consider seeking bonds or raising sales taxes, but he's in favor of annexing and creating a fire district that would be supported by property taxes. By doing so, West Odessa could have a professional fire department and ambulance service. Residents' insurance rate would see an immediate drop in price if that were to happen, he said. In the meantime, however, Gardner said he will be pushing for some of the county's American Rescue Plan Act money to put toward the county's volunteer fire departments and the Ector County Utilities District for improved water service. Water right now is such a huge thing. We have just seen what happens when the water system goes down, Gardner said. I don't know how it could not be at the top of the list, followed by fire right afterward. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, June 25th. Local news roundup. Two dead following wrecks this week. A Midland man and a Big Spring man lost their lives earlier this week in separate wrecks. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Kenneth Sean Bochide, 61, of Midland, was speeding on Business Interstate 20 around 3:40 p.m. on Wednesday when he failed to negotiate a curve near mile marker 144. His GMC Sierra traveled off the roadway to the right. He overcorrected to the left, and his vehicle went into a sideways skid and rolled. Bullsheed, who was not wearing a seatbelt, was thrown from the vehicle and killed. On Thursday, around 1:30 p.m., Terry Jack Smith, 66, of Big Spring, was traveling west on State Highway 158, roughly 16 miles southeast of Midland, when the left front tire on his Mack truck blew, causing it to veer across the eastbound lanes, go off the roadway, and roll, according to DPS. Smith also wasn't wearing a seatbelt, the DPS reported. Accused smuggler arrested in Odessa. An El Paso County woman was arrested Thursday after authorities said she left three children alone in an Odessa motel so she could smuggle people across the border. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a U.S. Border Patrol agent called the OPD shortly after midnight on June 10th and said he just arrested Abigail Flores, 24, on human trafficking charges, and she told him she'd left her 13-year-old sister to watch her 3-year-old twins at an Odessa motel. When Odessa officers arrived at the motel, the teenager sister said she had been brought from El Paso to Odessa to watch her niece and nephew while her sister made money acting as a coyote, according to the report. The OPD officer who wrote the report indicated the motel the trio were staying at is located in a common area for violent crimes and narcotics. Flores was booked into Ector County Jail on 3 counts of abandonment and endangerment of a child, a state jail felony. She remained in custody Friday afternoon. No bail has been set.
Obituaries and death notices from the Odessa American, published Saturday, June 25th. Obituary, Ricky Dan Rick Taylor, Odessa. Ricky Dan Taylor passed from this life Wednesday, June 22nd in Odessa. He was born January 31st, 1952 in Colorado City, Texas, to Emmett and Lola Taylor. He is survived in this life by his wife, Deborah Taylor, his brother Mick Taylor and partner Crystal Blevins, his daughters Rebecca Taylor Wick and husband Kenny Wick, Courtney Taylor Moose and husband Corey Moose, Whitney Taylor and partner Kevin Kahn, plus grandchildren. A memorial service is scheduled for Friday, June 24th at 11 a.m. at Greenfield Acres Baptist Church, 2114 West Yukon Road, Odessa. Death notices from Saturday. Frances Lorianne Davis, McKinney. Frances Lorianne Davis, 90, of Melissa, died Thursday, June 23rd in McKinney. Graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, June 30th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Renee Flores Joaquez, Arlington. Renee Flores Joaquez, 60, of Arlington, died Friday, June 17th in Arlington. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Tuesday, June 28th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial to follow at Ector County Cemetery at the Rose Hill section. Father Frank Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Anne Bray, Odessa. Anne Bray, 98, of Odessa, died Wednesday, June 22nd in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Melvin Jean Jones, Odessa. Melvin Jean Jones, 64, of Odessa, died Sunday, June 19th in Odessa. Celebration of life will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 25th at Texas and Clements Church of Christ. Burial will follow on Monday, June 27th at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Brother Devin DeShields is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Alita Sanchez King, Odessa. Alita Sanchez King, 89, of Odessa, died Wednesday, June 22nd in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. June 28th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Reverend Clydell Chapman is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Good morning, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, June 26th. Most of ECISD budget goes to instruction, by Ruth Campbell. With a total budget of $384,932,641, about 60% is going for instruction at Ector County ISD and 10% for maintenance. This includes across-the-board raises for the district's 4,200 employees. The 2021-22 budget was 352,511,770. The tax rate is anticipated to remain the same at 1.17792 per $100 valuation. Texas school boards are legally required to approve three separate budgets: the general fund budget, which is projected to be $338,720,000, debt service, which is projected at $27,547,576, and the school nutrition budget at $18,115,065. All are balanced budgets. The general fund includes the compensation plan approved by the ECASD Board of Trustees in May. Starting teacher salaries increased to $58,750. In 2017-2018, ECISD starting teacher salary was $44,500. Everyone on the teacher pay scale will get a minimum increase of $2,000. A 4% general pay increase at midpoint for hourly employees, campus-based, and central office, 3% of midpoint pay increase for all professional employees, campus-based, and central office. Raise the minimum wage from $15 an hour. This is up from $10 an hour 2 years ago. The pay increases come at a cost of approximately $9.3 million to the district's budget. The expenditure per pupil is budgeted at $6,025, up from $5,751 in 2021-22. Expenditures per pupil can be higher depending on whether students are special needs, bilingual, economically disadvantaged, a risk of dropping out of school, gifted and talented, or career and technical education students. Autumner said students in career and technical education can be funded up to $10,000 per student because of the cost of the equipment they're trained on. We get extra money, but we also have to prove that we spend it on those areas, so it's not just free for all, Autumner said. The $6,025 is the basic education. Funding allows students who transfer into ECISD. Some 33,500 students are expected to attend ECISD schools in the fall, including UTPB STEM Academy, with partners with ECISD. The cost to educate a child is all the different functions. It's not just instruction. It's a variety of things, such as transportation, food service, administration, sports fields, and maintenance. The maintenance and operation tax this year is just under a dollar, and debt services is just under 18 cents. Those two rates are different, but the total is the same, Autumner said. In May, Texas voters approved a state constitutional amendment raising the homestead exemption from $25,000 to $40,000. Proposition 1, a property tax limit reduction for elderly and disabled residents, also passed in May. It supports the amending the state constitution to authorize the legislature to reduce the property tax limit for school maintenance and operation taxes imposed on the homesteads of elderly or disabled residents. To reflect any tax rate reduction enacted by law from the preceding tax year, according to Balamapita. A number of companies are expected to come in at that obtain or in the process of trying to get an appraised value limitation under Charter 313. The Comptroller's web says an appraised value limitation is an agreement in which a taxpayer agrees to build or install property and create jobs in exchange for a 10-year limitation on taxable property value for school districts' maintenance and operation tax purposes. The minimum limitation value varies by school district, the site said. When there's 10-year time period runs out and those billions of dollars go on our tax roll, unless the law changes, that will throw us into recapture at that point, Autumner says. Chapter 313s are due to expire at the end of September, but the Comptroller's Office wants applications in by June 30th. The 313 should provide revenue to address learning needs and continue programs that started with federal COVID funds, she said. The district also expects some students to come back, which bring in more state revenue. Certified property taxes should be coming in July. Autumner said many students who were not in school this past year were in pre-kindergarten and kindergarten age range.
Here's an additional story from the front page of the Odessa American, published Sunday, June 26th. Downtown, a work in progress by Kim Smith. Casey Hallmark is optimistic. It's been a little over 6 months since she took over the reins at downtown Odessa, and she's convinced the momentum is picking up when it comes to revitalizing the heart of Odessa. Within a matter of months, Odessans will be able to eat pizza and drink wine at Homemade Wines, buy Christmas gifts and home decor at McJack General Store, dine at an indoor food court, and hang out at Icon Tavern. They'll also get to relish Odessa College's new green space, attend performances under two new canopies, and enjoy a splash pad. Hallmark is the executive director for Downtown Odessa, an organization that is half nonprofit agency and half city agency. The ultimate goal for downtown is to be a destination where people can come and spend the entire day shopping or going to the hotel, the Marriott, to go have a drink or grabbing a burger at the hamburger station. To make sure there are things to do that will fill up your whole day, she said. Over the last few months, Hallmark has been focused on spreading the word about grants available through the Odessa Development Corporation, hoping to attract both new businesses and improve existing aesthetics. Eligible business owners and operators can receive up to $25,000 in ODC grant money for their facades and up to $200,000 to revamp their infrastructure, Hallmark said. We just have a lot of buildings that are vacant, that have been vacant for a long time, that nobody's doing anything with, and whenever we have vacant buildings sitting, it doesn't look like a thriving downtown, Hallmark said. So we really want to encourage people to start renovating or sell and let somebody else come in and start renovating. When people buy property and sit on it, it doesn't benefit downtown. Hallmark suspects there are many vacant storefronts in downtown because people are unaware of the grants and are worried about the expense of rehabbing them. Many would require asbestos removal and have outdated plumbing and electrical systems and dilapidated roofs removed. John Harridge, a restaurant-turned-realtor, moved here in 1987 and fell in love with the downtown area. The board chair-elect of downtown Odessa has personally bought and sold 9 or 10 buildings downtown. He's also served as the realtor for 4 other downtown projects. He's currently helping 4 additional business owners who are revitalizing their downtown buildings during the design process. ODC's grant program is a huge boon, Harriet said. We've got grant money. That's one of the things that's really awesome about the city, Harriet said. When I went to the Texas Downtown Association meeting and we discussed this, most cities are not doing this. I mean, you don't see the facade grants and infrastructure grants that Odessa's offering in many other cities, at least to the size we're doing. Previously, when we were Main Street Odessa, you maybe could get $1,000 or a couple thousand for doors, windows, and a few things. But now you can get hundreds of thousands of dollars. He was drawn to downtown because he's always loved old buildings. I like the old architecture, and downtown was kind of rough and ugly and had a lot of vacancies, and I didn't like it, Harriet said. I wanted to see what we can do to get different ones involved to revitalize downtown, to bring it back. While he sometimes runs into naysayers, the owner of Copper Key Realty said he prefers to focus on the positive. Downtown is not the east side, the west side, the north side. Downtown is everyone's side. It's the center, Harriet said. Years ago, it was a huge gathering place, and it kind of went old, and we're building it back. I'm just super passionate about helping people downtown, regrowing downtown. Harriet, who serves on several boards, said he takes great pleasure in seeing the results. Yes, it has not been as quick as we want it at all, but there's progress, he said. There's lots of things happening downtown. The opening of the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center in October 2019 prompted a lot of excitement, but it had some unintended consequences, Hallmark said. This is just my opinion, but I think whenever the plans for the Marriott were announced, I think that people bought up property downtown thinking it was going to double or quadruple in price, Hallmark said. They thought, I'm going to get in, buy this property at a really low price, and then whenever the Marriott gets built and we have a thriving downtown, I'll sell it. COVID-19 hit, however, slowing down the momentum of the revitalization project. Some continue to believe they can make a huge profit and that might not be realistic, Hallmark said. She hopes they'll come around. We've got to fill these buildings up, Hallmark said. There's definite interest. I have probably between 20 and 30 businesses calling me a month trying to come downtown, so it's not that there's not the desire. Another problem is many of the vacant buildings are quite large, too large for the many boutiques and other small businesses that have expressed an interest in downtown, Hallmark said. For example, there's the former Gems Big and Tall, the old Piccadilly, and the former Rio Theater. In addition, Jeff Russell is moving Paul Evans Carpeting to a new location. Harriet said he'd love for investors to come in and subdivide the buildings to create rental spaces, especially for mom-and-pop businesses that don't have the funds necessary to buy a building. Hallmark and Harriet agree they'd like to see more eateries, retail stores, and green space downtown. A gym would be nice, and currently we're talking to two different ones, and we've got someone who wants to put in a bakery and someone who wants to put in another bar, Harriet said. While Hallmark isn't totally against someone from outside the area coming in, she'd prefer downtown to be filled with locally owned businesses. I think that kind of adds to the charm of downtown when it's homegrown local folks down here trying to make a living, she said. While Hallmark said she's eager to fill up all of the empty spaces downtown, she's not forgotten the existing downtown businesses. My goal is to research and look for things that are going to help the businesses that are here. I think sometimes it's really easy to focus on the new and the shiny and forget the people who have been here and held it down for so long, and I'm very grateful for them, Hallmark said. Asked for a downtown completion date, Harriet laughed. I don't think there will ever be an end. I think we'll continue to keep growing and expanding, because the more we build and the more we expand, the more people will get interested in it. Our downtown's very small, and I think we'll see it start spreading out, he said. Hallmark and Harriet noted the city is pursuing other avenues to make downtown more attractive, too. They opened up 85 new parking spots downtown by changing some of the parallel parking into diagonal parking, for example. The council also recently unveiled its downtown master plan, which focuses on walkability. Downtown will be dotted with public art, benches, bike racks, wider sidewalks, better signage, and more attractive landscaping. I see lots of things happening downtown, Harriet said. I'm really proud of our city, our city council, our city management. They're pushing. They're for it. They're behind us. They want a bigger, better downtown also. And to the naysayers, if you don't like what's happening, get involved. Help us out.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.